given the occasion that we were asking God's blessing on one little child, that the sermon would be appropriate enough on the subject of childbirth. Now, I want you to think for a minute about what kind of a sermon on childbirth would be. And then we'll talk about it. But we tend to categorize sermons in certain kinds of categories. There can be sermons that have to do with the law. There can be sermons that have to do with the restoration period, for sermons that have to do with the epistles of Paul, and so on. So we have different categories. So you think about, while we get through here, some of the introductory things having to do with the sermon, you think about what category you would put it in, and we'll come back to it. Again, greetings to everyone, and welcome to Sabbath Services in Hamburg, New York. How would you categorize a sermon on childbirth? What umbrella would you put that sermon under and collect with it similar kinds of sermons, or at least sermons that have somewhat the same subject matter? The sermon on childbirth that I'm going to give today, I have categorized as a prophetic sermon. Now, you may find that's a little bit unusual. How is childbirth prophetic? But I think I'm going to be able to show you that it is. And so that's one of the things I want to do here in that regard. God often uses physical examples about which we are familiar to present to us for our understanding. He uses the physical example to enhance our understanding about the subject. And so we're going to look at childbirth from that point of view. It enhances our understanding of prophecy, I would say, on this particular subject. Here's the concept. The coming of God's kingdom is like a mother bringing forth a child. And we're going to look at some scriptures that plainly say pretty much that thing. So today, in this sermon, I'm relating the sermon to the birth of a little child, because we have waited a long, long time to bless one little child. To enhance that point, or to support the point, I would like to quote what point that God has given us the birth of a child to help us to understand prophetically what is happening. That's the point. I'm going to quote a scripture that came out in the E-News that I read to you, and I had talked to several people who read it but had read right over this. I'm going to read you from the January 20 issue of the E-News, right near the end of the article, as written by Mr. Victor Kubik. I consider the sufferings of this present time, and you can think about, does a mother bringing forth a child kind of go through some suffering. I consider the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is going to be revealed in us. For the creation waits And when Paul wrote this to the church in Rome, this is from Rome chapter 8, the Romans chapter 8, verses 18 through 24. The creation was subjected to futility, not willingly. He starts to give personality characteristics and emotional characteristics to the creation. I guess Walt Disney would call that a technique of alliteration, showing almost that the creation has a kind of intelligence of its own. Not that it's not that it actually does, because it's an inanimate thing, isn't it? The creation was subject to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope that the creation will be set free from its bondage to decay and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. Now, what it's about to say here is the entire creation is waiting for the birth of the children of God. That's what it's about to say. I read it. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together. Now, when it says groaning together, what does that mean? We talk about a mother who has gotten to the point of delivering a child. We talk about the agony that she goes through as this is occurring as being a groaning. A groaning. That's one of the ways that we characteristics. We know that the whole creation, does a creation have those kind of feelings and sensations, not actually as in a physical sense as we would categorize it, but it says that the creation has been groaning together, the whole creation, groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now. And not only the creation, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit, you and hopefully me. I might think you have a better shot at it than I do, but I'm trying to at least learn a little bit of humility. We ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit groan inwardly, the same kind of language that was just used about the whole creation waiting for the manifestation of the children of God in the pains of childbirth until now. And not only the creation, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for the adoption as sons. I don't know that that's the adoption is may not be the correct word there. It might be the birth of, might be a better word. As we eagerly await, it says in the KJV, for the adoption as sons, the redemption of our body. For in this hope we were saved. Why were we saved? Why did God bring us into his family? Because there is a hope that we will become servants in his kingdom. But that requires a birth that the whole creation is going to go through, and you and I are going to go through that as well, childbirth. It's a prophetic subject. So what I want to do in this sermon is to relate Bible prophecy to the pregnancy and birth of the whole creation, childbirth. And I said it's a prophetic subject, so let's look at what it says in the book of Revelation. That's the one book we would probably think of as being the most prophetic book in the Bible. At least I would think that way. Revelation chapter 5, verses 1 through 5. We see here in this section of the Bible, this section of the book of Revelation, a scene in God's heaven whereby God the Father comes with a prophetic book in his hand, and he, in that vision that John sees, gives the book to Christ. I saw in the right hand, it says in verse 1 of chapter 5, in the right hand of him that sat on the throne, God the Father, a book written within and on the backside, and that book was sealed with 7 seals. And I saw a strong angel proclaiming with a loud voice, "Who is worthy to open the book and to loose the seals thereof?" No man in heaven, nor in earth, neither under the earth, was able to open the book, and none was able to look thereon. I had a friend many long years ago now, whose father, she told me, had written, and I was a little bit naive at the time. I thought I could share some of this information that I had with other people, not realizing the extent to which it had to come from God to each one of us individually. Anyway, her father had written an explanation of the book of Revelation, or at least substantial parts of the book of Revelation. And I look at this and I think about that now. Who is worthy to open the book and to loosen the seals of that book? Now, once the seals are opened, then the book can be opened to that point, and you will see what is written underneath that seal. Who is worthy to open the book and to loose the seals thereof? No man in heaven, no man on the earth, neither any man that's under the earth was able to open the book, neither able to look thereon. And I wept, John says here, the Apostle John, not John the Baptist, but the Apostle John, who's on the Isle of Patmos, and he's given this vision by God and the Father and Jesus Christ about prophecy, and he writes that down, and that's what becomes the book of Revelation. I wept much because no man was found worthy to open and read the book, neither to look thereon. Verse 5. One of the elders, there are 24 elders there around the throne of God, plus 4 beasts. One of the elders said unto me, "Do not weep. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah." Who is that? Well, that's Jesus Christ, isn't it? "The Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, he descended," and you see the descent at the first part of the book of Matthew, you'll see that he descended through David. His physical lineage comes from David through some other people until ultimately he was born himself. And the Lion of the tribe of Judah can open it. And it said no man was able to open it, but it says here now, there's a little bit of a correction. There's one man who it says can open it. He isn't a man anymore by the time this is given. He is God as well in the heavens with God the Father. And he can open it. He says, stop your crying. Weep no more. Stop your crying. Because here's why you stop it. The lion of the tribe of Judah, the root of David, has prevailed to be able to open that book and to loose the seven seals thereof. And then the rest of the book of Revelation proceeds to show Christ doing that. But we're here to understand that only the Lamb. Who is the Lamb? Well, in the book of John, written by the Apostle John, John the Baptist identifies Christ coming to his own baptism as the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. And here it says, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the root of David, has prevailed to open the book and the seven seals thereof. Christ is the Lamb of God, and he is able to open the book. But it says no other. Don't believe in the explanation of anybody else unless it comes from Christ. Let's look, because we're looking at the experience of motherhood and childbirth as being something that pictures a prophecy about the entire world, about God's first fruits and the church as a whole. And I took information here that I wrote down and put in my notes from this is the citation. National Women's Health, it's written like one word, NATIONALWOMENS, all lowercase letters and not separated at all, HEALTH, National Women's Health, .ADHB, .NZ. Now, I assume the NZ comes from New Zealand because it wasn't necessarily an American written thing. So, and in this segment of the book, it talks about labor and birth. It says there are three recognized stages of labor. Stage one, dilation of the cervix. For the entire pregnancy, I had this information before, for the entire period of the pregnancy, 9 months, the muscles of the uterus develop strength, somewhat like a weightlifter lifting weights to strengthen his bicep. A woman's uterus starts at pregnancy to develop muscular strength because those muscles are going to be necessary to open the cervix and allow the child to be born. That's stage one, the dilation of the cervix. And for the entire pregnancy, the muscles of the uterus exercise themselves naturally to develop strength. A woman's body begins well in advance to prepare for the delivery. Near the time of the delivery, the muscles of the uterus start to contract more and more frequently. I'm sure I'm not telling most of you ladies who've been there anything about this. The initial frequency of the contractions can be irregular, the frequency and the strength increase as it gets closer to the time of birth. That's stage one. Stage two is when the child separates from the mother. And then stage three, according to this article from New Zealand, occurs when the afterbirth separates from the mother. So for 9 months, the child has survived in a sac of amniotic fluid and is fed from the mother's blood. Great miracle, really, isn't it? It is a very great miracle how this, and we may just wonder, scratch our heads. You know, I don't have much protection up there anymore, and so I don't know that I can scratch my head too hard, but here it is. Here's the question that I would scratch my head over. How can all of this have evolved? Amazing, isn't it? Bible says we are fearfully and wonderfully made. And you ladies have had the opportunity, or may in the future have the opportunity, to look at how this progresses in your own body. God has given us things to represent what He is doing. And He designed pregnancy and childbirth to represent what He's doing with the whole world. That's what it said here in the book of Romans. And we're going to see some more things that are said in the same way as we continue on. It's a miracle. How did this complex series of events evolve? It just sort of developed on its own when nobody was looking, I guess. But let's look at another place. I said we're going to look at another place, so let's do it. Matthew 24. Now, what do we think of when we think of Matthew 24? Matthew 24 is the Olivet prophecy of Jesus Christ. In that prophecy, Christ and His disciples cross, I guess it's the Tyropian Valley, up on the Mount of Olives, and they sat down, the disciples came and asked Him for signs about when He would return and the kingdom of God would be established on earth. They wanted signs. When is this going to happen? How is it going to happen? Give us a sign. Give us more than one sign. Give us a series of signs about how this is going to come to pass. Matthew 24 then proceeds all of that prophecy, which is, I guess, widely considered the most prophetic chapter in the Bible, with the exception of the book of Revelation. Matthew 24 is written in the entire chapter is written in the context of childbirth. I'm going to show you how that comes to pass. Verse 8, we'll get down to verse 8. Sooner or later, but right now I'm just going to throw it out there, kind of at the beginning of the sermon. And it says, all these things are the beginnings of sorrows. And that's a translated word, sorrows. And I looked in a number of different biblical translations. I took this Matthew 24:8 from the King James translation. But I went and looked at 10, 11 other translations, and almost without exception, they say that all these are the beginning of the pangs of childbirth. And some of you probably have a translation that says it in that way. All of these events in Matthew 24 that proceeded in the first seven verses are the beginning of childbirth. Stage one of labor. Stage one of labor was the strengthening of the muscles of the uterus, and then the utilization of that muscular strength to open the cervix. All of these things, we're going to go back and read them, are the beginnings of sorrows. That's what the King James verse says. But most of the rest of the verses say, all of these things are the beginnings of birth pangs. Something is going to be born when you have those birth pangs, and they say, it says those things about it. Who can reveal those things to us? The Lion of the tribe of Judah has prevailed to open those seals and show us what is contained in that book. His disciples went to the Mount of Olives and asked Christ, and Christ reveals those things about the prophets, the prophetics that are in the book underneath the seals. The revelation from Christ and how he relates that revelation to childbirth. Childbirth, I repeat, is a prophetic subject because the whole world is involved in something similar to childbirth, going through difficulties as the time of the delivery approaches. Let's look at what's underneath the first four seals. Remembering that the seals can only really be opened by Christ himself. No man, it said in the book of Revelation, can open these seals or tell us what's in the book except the Lion of the tribe of Judah. Jesus Christ is the only one who can give us the correct understanding. Revelation chapter 6. Christ starts to open the seals and to explain what those seals are in Revelation chapter 6, starting in verse 1. I saw the Lamb open one of the seals. And this sort of reads like these seals are set up in such a way that you got to open them in the right order. You mean 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You can't start with number 7. Doesn't seem that that's possible, or maybe Christ just knew what was intended. The Lamb, verse 1 of chapter 6, opened one of the seals, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder. And one of the four beasts, remember we had the lion, book of Matthew, very much like the lamb, the lion, Mark, like the ox, Luke, like the face of the man, and John, the eagle. And one of those four beasts came saying, or after this clap of thunder, come and see. Come and see. Verse 2. This is what's under the first seal. And I think that these seals seem to be chronologically. It was the first thing developing toward the ultimate birth of God's kingdom and creation. Underneath the first seal was a white horse. And the white horse we're going to see here from Matthew 24, we're relating Revelation chapter 6, the book of prophecy that was given to Christ and the seals that Christ begins to open up. That is being related to Matthew 24. The first seal gets explained. This beast, one of the four beasts saying, "Come and see." But what is there to explain? Where is the explanation about the seals? We need to look in a different place for Christ to reveal the meaning of the seals to us. First seal, white horse. And when his disciples ask him, "What will be the signs of your return and of the end of the age?" What does he say? Revelation chapter 6 and verse 2 explains what we see underneath that first seal a little bit more. "I saw, and behold, a white horse. He that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer." And we've talked a good bit in sermons about the appearance of modern Christianity, Quarto Deciman, the Canaanites in the house of God, those things that ultimately gave rise to modern Christianity. Modern Christianity is kind of the opposite of primitive Christianity. As we keep the Sabbath day, the holy days, and the laws of God, that's primitive Christianity. Modern Christianity started to change all of those things. And by today, many people who come and read the Bible are sort of mystified by the fact that those days, those occasions, those observances that are talked about in the Bible and clearly practiced by the early New Testament church, they are completely different from what the Bible shows about that New Testament church. Matthew 24, verse 3. King in his court, Christ as the king, the lion of the tribe of Judah, king in his court. They came and asked him for a series of signs. In verse 3 of Matthew 24, as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately saying, "Tell us when." We want to know when. We don't want to have to wait. You tell us when so we can be ready. "Tell us when shall these things be? And what shall be the sign of your coming and of the end of the world?" Christ immediately starts in verse 4 to do that. Jesus answered and said unto them, here's the first sign, the first horse out of the seals, the white horse. Jesus answered and said unto them, "Take heed that no man deceive you." This white horse appears to be something very pure. White is kind of the color of purity, isn't it? Considered to be that way. Here the horse comes and there's a man riding on it with a bow and a crown, riding on that attitude of purity. But he says, don't believe them. He says, do not believe them. They're perpetrating modern Christianity. He says, don't you believe them. You believe what I am showing you. Many shall come, Christ says, in my name. They call how many different organizations call themselves Christian but do not practice the things that Christ practiced? There's a whole lot of those. There's a whole lot of those. Many shall come in my name, telling you that I am Christ, that I'm the Messiah, and they'll be right about that, but nevertheless, they will deceive many people. That's horse number one out of the barn. False Christianity is one of the birth pangs that we're talking about, that we're going to ultimately lead to the birth of a whole new world and a whole new leadership in that world, and you are part of that leadership. What about the second seal? Verse 3 of Revelation chapter 6. When he had opened the second seal, I heard the second beast say, "Come and see." And there went out another horse, and that horse was red. Now, what do we think of with red? One of the things we would think of when something is red is blood, isn't it? And what is the sort of high indicator of blood? What brings about the shedding of blood? Warfare. So the red horse seems to be indicating warfare. There went out another horse that was red, verse 4 of Revelation 6. And power was given to him that sat on to take peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another, and that was given unto him a great sword. That's a prophetic statement, isn't it? I hope you're seeing that childbirth is a subject of prophecy. Power was given to him that sat on to take peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another, and there was given to him a great sword. Christ reveals the meaning of the second horse in back to Matthew 24. We're connecting the book of Revelation chapter 6 to Matthew 24, where Christ explains the seals. And so that's where we come in verse 6 of Matthew 24. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you don't sweat it. See that you be not troubled. All of these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. Ultimately, what's going to happen in this warfare, this red horse is symbolizing, nation shall rise up against nation and kingdom against kingdom. Now this seems to indicate a greater level of conflagration than we had read about in all of the other wars that have been conducted. Nation shall rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. Big power blocks fighting like world wars. And we've had two of those. And we may be in for another one, who knows, before too long. Nation shall rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There shall be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in different places. So that's what Christ reveals to us. That's another of the birth pangs. The first of the birth pangs was false Christianity. I could say false religion, but it's clearly stated by Christ, they're coming in His name. So that's modern Christianity, isn't it? Christianity that doesn't understand who Christ was. They're very, for the most part, they're very sincere about what they believe, but nevertheless, they're wrong. And God has withheld understanding mostly from those people, because if they could understand, He would, because of His personality, I guess, have to hold them responsible. But as long as He withholds that knowledge from them, He can come back and much more easily forgive them in the future. Third horse. And we read a little bit in verse 7 of Matthew 24. Famines, pestilences, earthquakes in different places. But back now to the book of Revelation. We're connecting Revelation to Matthew 24. Back to the book of Revelation, chapter 6, verse 5. When He had opened the third seal. First seal was false Christianity. Second seal is wars and rumors of wars. Here's the third seal. And the horse that comes out from under that. When He had opened the third seal, I heard the third beast say, a measure of wheat for a penny and three measures of barley for a penny, and see that you hurt not the oil and the wine. Seems to be picturing a loss, doesn't it? Here in the book of Revelation, without even needing the book of Matthew to explain it, it seems to be indicating that there's going to be a loss of the abundance that we have always experienced throughout our entire lives. God has provided abundantly for us. Matthew 24 and verse 7, a single sentence. Not even a full sentence, just part of the sentence. I sort of took a segment of the sentence out in verse 7. There shall be famines. Third horse seems to be picturing a measure of wheat for a penny, a measure of barley for a penny. See that you hurt not the wine or the oil. That there was going to be a very great scarcity. There shall be famines and pestilences. Guess what we've experienced here in the last 2-3 years? We've been experiencing COVID, haven't we? Pestilence. And they say hundreds of thousands of Americans have died from COVID. I don't know how much they're cooking the books on that, but that is what's prophesied here. And earthquakes in different places. So, what about the article in January 20th edition of the volcanic eruption near Tonga? A great seismic event. And as I read some of the reports, it said ash from that volcano was a foot deep. That's a lot of ashes that came out of that volcano. And a lot of fulfillment, as we would look at it, where earthquakes are concerned. Fourth horse. Fourth seal, pale horse, which is disease. Revelation chapter 6, verse 7. When He had opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth beast say, come and see. And I looked, and behold, a pale horse. His name that sat on him was death and the grave, hell, it says here. But hell is a word for the grave. death and the grave followed with him. And power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth. Now, how many billion people do we have on the earth now? Like, we're getting, I think it's around 10 billion. One-fourth of that population, it says, are going to be killed with the sword, with hunger, with death, and with the beast of the earth. Matthew 24 and verse 7. There will be pestilences and earthquakes in different places. And we could chronicle for you some of the diseases, but I'm already over time. We have a continuation, Matthew 24. Starting in verse 16, Christ is saying, and this is again in the scenario of childbirth. There is an event that's known in childbirth as the transition period. And it's a time of a kind of panic that hits the mother as the child begins to be born. This is transition period that's being described here. We have all of these birth pangs in the first four horses, and here in verse 16 is what is indicated as transition. Let them which be in Judea head for the hills, run to the mountains. Let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. You got to do this when this happens. When you see this, you got to do it quickly and immediately. Neither let him which is in the field come back and take his clothes. Woe to them, it says, mothers. Woe to them that are with child and to them that give suck in those days. Pray you that your flight is not in the winter, and that it is not on the Sabbath day. For then shall be the transition period. Great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. Except those days should be shortened, every man, woman, and child would be killed. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. Back to what it said in verse 7 of Matthew 24. Nation shall rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There shall be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in different places. Let's read again what Paul had to say to the Romans. Romans chapter 8 and verse 18. It's one of the most encouraging and magnificent prophecies that are given in the Bible. I reckon, I have come to the conclusion, Paul is saying, that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. And can you take that in a personal way, that there's going to be glory revealed in you, and it's going to be so great that it's going to be unworthy to even try to compare the suffering to it. The earnest expectation of the creation. He's giving the creation the ability to think through things. The creation, expectation of the creation, waits for what? This is not going to proceed until we get to the point of the appearance of the sons of God. The earnest expectation of the creation waits for the manifestation of the sons of God. The creature was made subject to vanity, not willingly, but by reason of him who has subjected the same in hope, because the creation itself shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. That's you. Now we know the whole creation groans and travails and birth pangs together until now. And not only they, but ourselves also, which have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for our spiritual birth, to wit, the redemption of our body. Verse 24. We are saved by hope, but hope that is seen is not hope. For what a man sees, why does he yet hope for it? The entire creation is going to go through a childlike birth process. The whole creation is waiting to be born. Childbirth is a prophetic subject with a father, God the Father, a mother, God's church, and children, you and I.